Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature an interview with Lawrence Ho, the chairman and CEO of Melco International, on the recent departure of Crown Resorts as his partner in his Macau ventures and other topics. The GGB podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the nation's leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos.
To make those rainbows in my mind when I think of you sometime, and I want to spend some time with you.
Lawrence Ho has been a major player in the Macau and Asian gaming markets since before the handover of Macau to China in 2002. He formed Melco International to forge his own casino company in partnership with Crown Resorts. The recent departure of Crown from that joint venture means a new era for Ho and Melco. Ho talked about his joint ventures in Russia at Tigre de Crystal and at the City of Dreams project in Manila. He spoke with me from his offices in Hong Kong in May. Lawrence, thanks for taking the time to talk with us. I really appreciate it. Exciting time for your company. You've got a lot of things going on, and I think the most important thing that I've seen recently has been the departure of Crown as co-owners of your company. So you're all on your own now.
Yeah, you know, I think like we said in our release, you know, it is the conclusion of the most successful gaming partnership, you know, ever. Because in the gaming space, usually there aren't that many partnerships, and also they usually don't last very long. And most of the time, when they end in very bitter disputes, you know, lawsuits, etc. And James and I, we were just in touch a couple of days ago over the weekend. We're still great friends. We're both young, you know, we're both optimistic about the future, and we still might do things somewhere down the road together, so who knows. But at the same time, for Melco and myself, it's extremely exciting, because I really see now is the time. You know, this transaction really took place over the last 12 months, because it was a partial sell down each step of the way from Crown.
Right.
With the first transaction taking place last May. So I really see the market turning around in not just in Macau, but literally you know, driven by Chinese economy, driven by China's export of tourism. You know, the upside is extremely positive.
No question. I want to start with some of the operations in Macau here. I just got a chance to see Studio City for the first time last night. I hadn't been here in the past year, and it's a pretty spectacular property. How is that performing now?
Studio City is doing much better. You know, Studio City opened in October 2015, so when it grand opened, it really opened at a time where Macau was going through its toughest time. And so if you look at Studio City and the property that opened before this, Galaxy Phase 2, both of those properties really opened during kind of the tough times in Macau. Whereas Wynn Palace and Parisian opened during the beginning of the recovery, the beginning of the upwave, where there was growth in the market. So Studio City is doing better. But it, you know, Studio City's main investment thesis was always based on the fact that the Lotus Bridge, which is the second ground border crossing they have, Studio City has all the fame and probably slightly worse. So, you know, we're very excited about the infrastructure improvement in the future, but at the same time, there's, you know, there is a period where we have to, where we need to wait for those infrastructures to really kick in.
Sure. I also saw the new tower at City of Dreams. Pretty spectacular. I was really blown away by how it looks. I saw the models, of course, but the actual, to see it in person is amazing. What's the opening date on that tower?
So Morpheus Tower, which is the last phase of City of Dreams, is due to open before next April.
Uh-huh.
We're less than a year away. There's a lot of fit-out work going on inside. A lot of MVP work has already been in. And we really look at the opening of the Morpheus as the beginning of effectively what we like to believe is COD 2.0. When City of Dreams opened in 2009, it was a very different market and a different property. But over the last few years, we've solidified our position as the top premium mass and premium direct property. So with MGM opening later on this year and Wynn, which opened last year, we really think that that corner, it might not be part of the Cotai Strip, because the Cotai Strip technically is the Venetian City of Dreams corner.
Right.
But that would be the Wynn MGM and the COD corner would be a really nice corner. And so we've done a lot of work over the last 2 years to continually upgrade our property so that we will continue to be the leader in the premium mass and premium direct view. And so with the unveiling of Morpheus, it really completes the retail loop, and we've done a lot of work on upgrading and improving the retail proposition, and we effectively built a brand new department store last year. And so it's a significant moment for City of Green Plant. That opens up. And time of the opening of Morpheus, once we have the additional 800 rooms, we will also shut down the entire what is currently Hard Rock, but will be temporarily branded the Countdown Hotel.
Uh-huh.
We'll shut that hotel down, and that's why the Countdown Hotel would have a clock that counts down to the opening of Morpheus. And once we shut that hotel down, we would totally effectively gut it out, renovate it all over again, and rebrand it as something that we will create in-house.
Okay, that's exciting, and certainly the architecture of the Morpheus Tower is really stunning. I guess you're very pleased that it was one of the last projects from the architect. She was such a genius.
Yeah, she was. The late Dame Zaha Hadid was amazing, but at the same time, what she designed was very difficult to build, and that's why it's taken as long as we have, and really taken a lot of resources, capital, and expertise.
Sure, no question. So, how does Altira fit into the three properties? Is that your premium property, or how do you position that?
Well, you know, Altira, me, will always be special. It's my first property, first child. And I still really love Altira. I was just there for, we celebrated our 10th anniversary last week at Altira.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really feel like Altira can contribute more financially to the group. The heyday of Altira in terms of Altira contributing $200 million EBITDA is, no longer valid. Of course, given that the integrated resorts of Kotai, we built two of them with the Springs and Studio City, we understand that. But still, I think Altira was misguided for the last few years, and I think that's why we had such a big management overhaul. And of course, Altira was one of the entities where we had that overhaul. So we look at Altira really as what it is, which is a 4-5 star, one of the original 4-5 star position it to be, and at the same time, to us, we're results-oriented, and we want to just make sure that it contributes more meaningful.
Okay, great. So you mentioned the rebound of the gaming revenues in Macau. At the same time, the government is still stressing non-gaming amenities and attractions, non-gaming attractions in Macau. Do you think you've satisfied that with your properties here?
Well, absolutely. I think as the company between City of Dreams and City of City, we've done more than any of the other competitors. And the government do give us credit for that, to be fair to them. I think that's really been our point of differentiation. So on one hand, we've done what the government has wanted us to do, but on the other hand, I genuinely believe that the amenities and the non-gaming attractions are really the things that set us apart from our competitors.
Sure, no question. So we've seen the growth of the premium mass and the mass market, but the VIP market is still very important. How do you think that's going to play out in the next 3 or 4 years? Do you think VIP is going to continue to be continue to grow, or is mass market really going to start to take over?
Well, I think first of all, mass market for the last 12 months has already taken over. So when you of course the table classification is City of Dreams, and along with a couple of properties, we classify some of our premium mass areas officially as VIP, membership based areas.
Sure.
And so, but if you break down the classification confusion, and a lot of sell side analysts from the big banks already have done that. Mass has taken over. It's over 50% of the market, 50% of the revenue. And mass is four times as profitable as VIP for operators.
Mm-hmm.
So it's significant, and I don't see that trend going away.
Okay.
Because deep down, if you look at Melco Resorts, it really is a company that is focusing on the growing middle class.
Sure.
And we think of ourselves as pioneers of international entertainment, focusing on the growing middle class of the world. That's really what this company is about. And we've had this feeling for over the last 10, 12 years, which is, China is going to be a biggest contributor to that growing middle class, and we should take advantage of that.
Sure.
So, yes, VIP has done well, and it's done beyond expectation, probably for the last, better than expectation for the last 4 or 5 months. And I'm glad it is the case because, ultimately as a company, we like cash flow, free cash flow, and absolute EBITDA. So we don't really, we have no preference which form it comes in. But I do think once, and VIP got hit much harder than that during the downturn. I think once it becomes more normalized, VIP would be like the old days, which grows as part of, you can look at it as Chinese GDP growth, plus or minus a few percent. So I think it would normalize over the next few years, but I'm actually very happy that VIP is growing again.
Sure. Now, when I was here a couple of years ago, and I spoke with the CEOs, they kept telling me that we've only penetrated 1 or 2% of the Chinese market. Is that still the case, or is that percentage gone up a bit now?
It's gone up a bit, but again, if you look at Macau, to me, it's really been about Guangdong. So the success of Macau and the fact that it got up to at one point the $45 billion market, and now it's closer to a $30 billion market, has really been the growing affluence of the Guangdong market. It's not even of the entire China, because Guangdong, Hong Kong is really still the bulk of the business of Macau.
Right.
And so I really see, of course, we're very and Japan and some in that jurisdiction, and we've done a lot of work there. I look at Japan really as the future growth of the North Asia market or North China market. And in Macau, we've only seen the success of the Southern China market. So, it of course, it's not just like 1 or 2% of China anymore, because Macau has, you know, broadened and reached to more parts of China. But it's still a very low penetration base compared to most mature gaming jurisdictions.
Great. Well, you know, let's talk about that North China market. You built the Tigre de Crystal casino in outside of Vladivostok. That seems to be performing pretty well. Are you pleased with what's happening up there?
Yeah, I personally haven't been up there for a little while because my role in that is more of from an investor basis rather than
okay. The Philippines, the City of Dreams in Manila, you know, all gaming there, it looks like it was off to a rough start there, but you're happy where it's at right now? I just have one more question. I want to ask about Japan. That seems to be the topic on everybody's tongue these days. There was some indication last week that the Japanese companies want to have a majority ownership in the resorts there. Would Melco be open to that kind of arrangement, being a minority partner rather than a majority partner?
So I wouldn't say, it wouldn't be a flat no, but we would really want to understand how many licenses and work out the probability first before we would even consider signing up to a deal like that.
Sure.
Because we still feel that the global gaming operators, like us, you know, and to align the interests of the party, and we can all write the check anyway.
Yeah.
That we should have and I think I would echo this view with most of my competitors that we should be the majority. But again, if the Japanese government says, instead of what Global Market Advisor is advising, which I agree with, that aspect could probably build a Cotai Strip / Las Vegas Strip.
Mm-hmm.
But if the government says, no, it's only going to be one in Osaka, one in Yokohama, and Japanese and kind of nudge us towards, Japanese companies have to be the majority, then again, we're young, and who knows what's going to happen, we'll say, fine. But we really need to understand the circumstances.
Sure. Well, Lawrence, thanks for the time. I really appreciate you giving me so much. I'd like to catch up again next year after the Morpheus Tower opens, because that sounds like it's really going to be a game changer for City of Dreams.
Thanks a lot, Roger.
If you enjoyed this edition of the GGB podcast, sponsored by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing partner for online and land-based casinos. If you want to hear more about the topics discussed today, visit GGBMagazine.com for all the news and trends in the casino industry. For weekly updates, subscribe to GGB News, which delivers all the news of the gaming industry to your desktop, waiting for you every Monday morning. Please join us next week for another edition of the GGB podcast. And don't forget to follow GGB on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz, on Facebook and LinkedIn at Global Gaming Business Magazine. Have a great week.